And we are live, folks, a little bit late by about a minute, but it's mainly because I sat there and watched the little spinny thing run for about a minute, wondering if it was going to work, and there was just a Spectrum internet truck outside of my house, so I was wondering if maybe they screwed something up, but apparently not. As far as I can tell, we are 5x5 on the output. If you guys have any trouble hearing me on the live chat, let me know so that I can at least know that it's going on, because right now I'm still seeing a viewer count of zero, and I know that is not the case, so I'll just keep going, and maybe somebody will let me know that they can hear me, because I'm a little bit concerned. Anyway, moving on, let's just tell you what we're going to be talking about today. Today's going to be one of those current events type shows, and there the viewer count just went up, so somebody's out there. But we're going to have one of these current event shows, and I wanted to say a little bit about that today as to why I do these shows. I do them for two reasons. The lesser reason I'll talk about first, but I'll acknowledge it, and that's because more of you show up when I do these shows than when I do a show like How to Actually Fix Problems in Your Life. When I talk about all the crazy shit that's going on in the world, I end up with 200, 300 people by the middle of these live streams, where when it's like more of a practical how-to show, I end up with 75 to 100. So that just tells me right there that you guys want this, and it is also, there's a marketer in me. I have to make a living, and more people paying attention equals more results. But there's another reason, and it's far more the reason, and it's because I think we need to. My entire goal in life is to help you figure out what to do in your life to make your life better if times get tough or even if they don't. You notice I didn't tell you what to do to make your life better. Because I can't make those decisions for you. I'm Jack Spirico. I'm in my 50s. I'm financially pretty well off. I own a home with an interest rate of 3% on it, actually 2.9 or something like that, that I bought years ago and got it at a good deal even back then. So my life is different than, let's say, a 28-year-old kid trying to come up in the world living in Virginia near the Maryland border. And then his life is going to be very different than a 75-year-old retired woman who lives in Central Florida, who will be very different from, let's say, a 19-year-old kid deciding whether to go to college or not living in Phoenix, Arizona. All those people, even if we are all very similarly minded when it comes to ethics and morality and principles, our life and then our life choices are always different. And part of what you need to do to make a good choice here is to know what's going on in the world. So that's why we're going to do this today, and it's almost all bad. There's one positive story and then one uplifting life lesson at the end, and that's why we're doing it. So what do we got? Well, the new NDAA, that's the National Defense Authorization Act, championed by, as always, Chicken Hawk Lindsey Graham, the rhino from the right that just keeps on giving more and more. It enrolls all males 18 to 26 for the draft. Of course, everybody says that means World War III is coming. I'm not saying that, but I have a couple ways we need to look at this. And something that's unknown by a lot of people as well. I believe before you get mad about something, you should know how things were before the thing happened and did it actually change anything for you. And in this one, for a lot of people, this changes nothing. I'm 25 and I didn't register for the draft. Odds are, in many states, you're registered for the draft, whether you did it or not. This already exists. This nationalizes it. I'm not saying that makes it better. And the real problem I see here is a force strength issue. And that might mitigate fears about World War III a bit, but it's going to be interesting if they have to pull this this gambit. And they might, because we are seriously missing a recruiting level requirements for the military, especially the Army and the Marine Corps, heavily, heavily missing those numbers. Then I have, related to the draft, I have an extremely powerful one-minute speech by Jesse Ventura. Yes, that is Jesse the Body, the guy that was a wrestler in the 80s and 90s and was the governor of Minnesota and was also a Navy SEAL. And I don't even know where this talk is from, but it looks like it's on the floor of like the Senate or the Congress, the House. And he's answering a question. And it's just a hair, like 1 minute, 3 seconds of him talking. And it's one of the most powerful views on war, foreign policy, and the draft I've ever heard. And it's probably nothing like you'd expect unless you've seen it before. a French general, you know, saying that we need to control information to influence both national and international public opinion about war. If they tell you the truth, you might not support it. That's the Jack Spirko version of this, but it's kind of a quiet part out loud thing. It's really important when we're prosecuting a war somewhere else in the world, especially a proxy war like in Ukraine, that we control public opinion, because otherwise the publics might not be okay with what the privates are doing. Yeah. Then Lindsey Graham did say the quiet part out loud last week about Ukraine. The quiet part out loud is there are trillions of dollars, trillions with a T, and we kind of need some trillions right now, of minerals in the Ukraine, and we cannot let Vladimir Putin have that windfall. And here's the funny thing. You know that old piece, that Donbass region, right? Those four provinces that Nikki Haley can't name one of them, those four little provinces. Yeah, that's where a lot of the minerals are. I'm just saying, like most of them. In fact, that's pretty much the only industry that area of Ukraine has. Interesting, isn't it? So we'll talk about that a little bit. The World Health Organization announced recently that some poor guy died of the bird flu, the one that's infected chickens and cows. He died from it in Mexico, and the whole world could die. This could be 100 times worse than the last pandemic or planet, whatever it was, right? Okay. It was a lie. The World Health Organization lied, period, again, period. So we'll talk about that. And I just don't think that the publics are going to play pandemic again. I just don't think we're going to do it. I think that they went so overboard and so lied in the 2019-2020 bullshit buildup, and so much has now come out showing that I don't think the publics are willing to obey the privates in the future on that lie anyway. Not to find a new lie. Then I do have one bit of good news for you. The pistol brace ban. You remember the government said, yeah, you can have a pistol brace. No, you can't. Yes, you can. No, you can't. Yes, you can, but you can't put it to your shoulder. Yes, you can, but you can't mount it to the pistol. Yes, you can. No, you can't. No, you can't at all. Right? That's kind of the in and outs that went with all these bureaucratic decisions on it. And the final one was they're illegal. Can't have them. No new laws, no new ordinances. Shit's been illegal and illegal like 10 times since they kind of became a thing. Well, federal judge just said, nope, can't do that. You do not have the authority to ban these things. You don't. They do not meet the definition of an SBR, which is a short-barreled rifle. They don't fall under your purview this way. You're screwed. Now, that one, it can go higher level, and the government having unlimited resources will appeal that, and that may be on its way to the Supreme Court. But at the same time this came down from a federal judge in Texas about pistol braces, the Supreme Court weighed in on the bump stock ban and said you can't do that either. So we'll talk about that. And we'll talk about the kind of the most delicious irony that there is, like the most delicious irony that there is in all of this. The left is now losing their minds about the bump stock because they're having the Las Vegas thing hyped about it, which I believe, by the way, that the Las Vegas shooting was done with a belt-fed machine gun. And if you want to research that, you can. You go in and you listen to the cadence of the shooting in Vegas versus like a belt-fed M60 or a belt-fed saw. And you listen to what an AR-15 sounds like when fired from a bump stock. It's pretty hard to argue that. The rate of fire is just very, very different. But I believe that the decision by Trump to order the ATF to enforce the ban on full automatic weapons as it pertained to bump stocks creating fully automatic weapons was unconstitutional. I also said it was going to happen. It was only a matter of time before they got banned in their junk. I stand behind all that. I also stand behind the fact that it's unconstitutional. And what's beautiful right now is Trump actually did something unconstitutional that the left is defending. It's just the beautiful irony in this clown-ass world that we live in. Oh, and a former chief of the NSA was just hired to serve on the board you can't believe this, if you ain't heard it yet, for OpenAI, people behind ChatGPT. So the largest artificial intelligence company on the planet just hired the former chief of the NSA to work for them as a member of their board. No good can come from this. You should just start thinking about what that really means, right? Additionally, we're talking about the biggest economic story of the year so far, at least outside of Bitcoin. And this actually strengthens the Bitcoin story, but it doesn't have anything directly to do with Bitcoin. Something we've been told would be a disaster for years just happened, and no one's interested in talking about it. You ever hear of the petrodollar? It's an agreement that we have with the Saudis since the early 70s that basically strengthened the position as the dollar as the world reserve currency, that the Saudis would only price oil in dollars and only accept dollars for oil. Well, the agreement just ran out like 2 weeks ago. The Saudis went, yeah, man, we don't need it anymore. It doesn't mean the Saudis won't sell oil for dollars or price in dollars. It just means they don't have to. There's only one reason you would choose not to have to, because you're gonna. So we'll talk about what that means. We'll talk about Biden's mental decline, but could it be a debate trap for the orange man? How would that work? I think it'll make sense when I explain it. Chuck Schumer put up a Father's Day post yesterday, and normally I leave politicians alone with their pandering bullshit. This one's great. He was cooking some burgers on the grill. Talking about the first time he ever had a backyard to cook burgers in, which I think is bullshit to begin with. All these guys are rich as fuck. Apparently, he's never owned anything but an apartment in his life. Whatever. But we'll cover it when we get there. But I think it's actually a great analogy or metaphor for all of government and the way that government and media collude against the American people and why it usually works. Because even if it's in plain sight, like a Fenord, you have to actually look at it critically to see it. And we all suffer from a lot of Gelman amnesia on top of it. And then Trump put out a proposal to replace the income tax with tariffs. I'm going to talk about a couple things. One, why it would actually work. And for the special children, all taxes theft. I know that. I'm not advocating for anything. I'm saying, would it make things better or worse than they are right now? And the answer is it would make it better. And I have a really long, well-thought-out thread on the topic from a person I really like that I follow on X. And you can read that if you want more than what I'm going to say about it. But it would work, and it would be better than what we have, and it would still be theft. And yes, you would still be paying the bill, but you would have a choice in it. We'll talk about that. And then we're going to talk about how life's trials make you more of what you already are. That'll be our uplifting lesson at the end of all this crap. And there is a lot of crap today. I'll tell you what ain't crap, though. Anton's Biltong from Anton's Land of Biltong. I love this stuff. I'm addicted. I am a Biltong addict. I'm a Doo-Wars addict. What's a Doo-Wars? A South African type of dry sausage. And I almost think it's heresy. I almost think I like them better than I do the Biltong. And the truth is I don't, except with the real difference is I can make Biltong anytime I want. Doers are more work. You got to be stuffing stuff and dry curing it and all, where the Biltong's really, really easy to make. But I'll tell you what, either way, and there's a bunch of other really cool stuff available from Anton's Land of Biltong. Check it out. He's got all kinds of stuff. They have what they call sticks, STIX, which are just basically thin, narrow, more hardened pieces of Biltong. And I like to cut those up in little bite-sized pieces when I'm eating those. They've got really hot and spicy, moderate hot and spicy, good old Angus beef, Wagyu beef, just great stuff. Check them out today. And they do have programs you can get on like I'm on where you get Biltong sent to you every week. I get mine every other Wednesday. And, man, I kind of wish it was every Wednesday because it's just that good. Next up today, KnifeKits.com. KnifeKits has been a sponsor of this show for a very, very, very long time. Almost since the very beginning of the show, we've been working with KnifeKits. I would say they were like the third sponsor to come along and say, yeah, we want to be part of what you're doing. That was in 2010. It's 2024. 14 years sponsoring this show. Check them out. If you've ever wanted to get into the craft of making knives, they make it real super easy, soft onboard entry. You know, you don't have to know how to do all the stuff. You can basically learn to do the final fit and finish on the handle material, put the pins in, stuff like that, and then sharpen a frame that's already been made for you. And you can progress from there anywhere you want to. They also have all the stuff you could possibly want for, like, making leather sheaths, Kydex holsters, just a lot of cool stuff. Check them out today at knifekits.com, where anybody can make a knife, even me. So let's start digging into the clown world today. And I want to start off with something that is getting a lot of traction, a lot of talk, and I don't necessarily disagree, but I also don't think we always need to overreact everything. We should understand it and analyze a little bit better. So inside the NDAA, which is the National Defense Authorization Act, which is every time it gets reauthorized, it's worse for the American people. I'll just say that. Here's another example. But this time inside there, there is a provision that instantly enrolls all males age 18 to 26 for the draft. So you don't have to go to the post office or fill out an online form or anything anymore. You're just registered for the draft. And when I was thinking about this, something popped into my mind. I remember being 17 years old and enlisting in the United States Army and having done that, be told, now you don't have to register with Selective Service, which is a nicer, softer, gentler way of saying register for the draft. That's what it really means. And when they told me that, I was like, oh, so we still have a draft? I mean, I wasn't the most informed high school teenage kid out there, really, about stuff like we talk about on the show today. I was a typical 17-year-old growing up in the coal country. And I'm like, I thought the draft ended. And they're like, well, no, they stopped using it, but you still have to register for it. But you don't because you joined the military. So that already happened. Plus, you're already in the military. Well, okay, fine, cool. And I remember talking to some of my friends and going, hey, this draft thing, this selective search, have you guys done this? No. Now, a lot of my friends were 16, 17-year-old, you know, a little bit younger than me. But a lot of my friends were older. The response I got was, I ain't doing that shit. And so, you know, you look at, well, what can happen if you don't do it? And, you know, technically you can be thrown in federal prison for it, but they don't do that to anybody. You can be denied certain things like certain jobs or what have you. But really it's been this rule that could be selectively prosecuted and never is. And I'm not even sure it's ever really prevented anybody from getting a job or a student loan or something. Because it could also be like, you know, like you're trying to get a federal job and you're 24 years old and you never register for the draft. And they're like, hey, you can't get in because you're not registered. Oh, I didn't know. And you go register. Now you've only been registered for 2 years. And again, nobody's been drafted since toward the middle end of the Vietnam War. So nobody thinks about this anymore. But I was like, I wonder what the compliance, like how many people out there right now are actually registered for the draft? And I don't remember what the number was, but it was like the 80 percentiles. And I said to myself, self, that's way higher than I would have thought. So I said, well, what's behind this? So I started researching that. And what I found out is every state regulates this independently as to how compliance is incentivized, obtained, and measured. Meaning that Pennsylvania's policy on it is very different than Texas. So I looked up Pennsylvania, where I lived when I was a teenager back in the 80s, and the compliance was like 60-something percent. And I looked up Texas, and Texas's compliance was like 97%. And I said, self, something's wrong here. It's not like Texans are, especially 18, 20-year-old kids, are that much more rah-rah cheer on the flag than Pennsylvania teenagers. What's going on? And I had an inkling of this, and I ended up being completely correct with it. In the state of Texas, in many other states, the majority of states, when you get your driver's license, your state automatically registers you at Selective Service, whether you approved it or not. Some states have an opt-out provision for that, like California. And some states like Pennsylvania and New Jersey don't do it at all, and they leave it up to you. So what that means is for most young men, 18 to 26, you're probably already registered even though you didn't do it, and this doesn't actually do anything to you. So that might mean you don't need to freak out about it since it already happened. And I promise you, if we ever had gotten to a point where they decided to reinstate the active draft, this whole idea that since you didn't register, you're not known by the government is nonsense. But I do think they might be getting ready to do something, and I don't necessarily think it's provoking a war with Xi Jinping in China and Putin in Russia, though it worries me for other reasons about those possibilities. We missed our recruiting bogey for the United States Army last year by 45,000. That's after it was already lowered due to bad numbers the previous year and to, you know, like bring the goal within expectations. Still missed it by a ridiculous amount, And the Marine Corps ain't no better. And while the Navy and the Air Force being seen as better career opportunities by a lot of potential folks that would join the military are doing okay, they're not exactly hitting home runs with recruiting either. And I have to ask myself right now, if you're 18, 19, 20-year-old kid, and you think about what to do with your life, why join the Army or the Navy or the Marine Corps or whatever? Why? What are you going to really get out of it? There are always going to be people that want to do jobs like that. There will always be people their situation is bad enough. If the Army says, hey, if you enlist, we'll let you be a mechanic, like I was, they'll go do that because, like, hey, I don't have to necessarily go straight into war then. I can work on trucks, or I can be a supply person, or I can be a cook, or I can be a medic. Like, there's all kinds of things you can do that it won't be that they'll never put you in harm's way, but you won't be actively engaging with the enemy on purpose, right? So there'll always be some. But if I'm sitting here right now, and I'm a 20-year-old kid right now in 2024, and I say, what's my best path? There's so many better paths for me as an individual than signing my life away to the military. And if I am a white male, I'm going into a position where I know that I'm going to be last in line for every opportunity and promotion. So why would I join? And missile launch is saying, fall of Rome, fall of Rome. And yeah, it's exactly what we're looking at. You can't get young men to defend the ideals of your nation by wearing its uniform. You've really fallen. And I mean, I'm at a point now, I can't recommend anybody join the military. I have wonderful friends that are in the military. And if somebody joins the military today, I will tell them good luck and Godspeed and thank you. But I still think it was a bad decision. It is the case that I believe we're about to see a return to an active draft, but it doesn't necessarily have to do anything with war. And it's not like we've never had this before. Elvis Presley was drafted in peacetime. Since he made so many war movies and stuff like that where he was a singing soldier, people don't realize that. But Presley was drafted in between the Korean and Vietnam wars. There was no active war going on when Presley was drafted. They just could not meet the recruiting goals. And since they couldn't meet the recruiting goals and we're in a Cold War and all, and we need more soldiers, so people got to serve. And I think that's coming. And it's going to be interesting to see how a segment of society, the demographic that right now is between 18 and 25, has been incredibly conditioned to obey the government and do what the state says. And at the same time, they're the most entitled, spoiled generation we've ever had. And they don't think that this actually is going to affect them. And what happens when Billy and Tommy start waving goodbye to their friends because they're going off to the army, even if it's not for a war? It's going to be an interesting dynamic to look at. Tuger says Muhammad Ali chose jail over the draft. You know, that's an interesting thing too. He's pretty much one of the only people that went to jail over the draft. If he wasn't well known the way that he was, and I'm going to say at the time that it was going on also black and public with it, he probably would have never went to jail for it. Plenty of people ran to Canada or whatever they want to say, but plenty of people just didn't do it and nothing really happened. So it's going to be how it's going to work this time. See, draft summons is somewhat in a way like jury summons. Not that the service is equal or anything, but this is what I mean. If you're summoning people to juries and people don't show up, usually the government entity that summons someone to appear on a jury doesn't actually do anything about the fact that nobody showed up. And the reason is they serve enough summons that enough people show up to meet the requirement that they have. So it's unnecessary to go out and create commotion by going after people who are going to claim, I didn't know, I didn't get it, I forgot, I couldn't read it, I didn't think it applied to me, whatever, right? It's a difficult thing to deal with. So you only deal with it when you start having such noncompliance that you can't operate. If we go into a draft, especially during peacetime, we're already there, or they wouldn't do it. Because in the end, even conscription, until they start doing what Ukraine's doing, which is literally driving around, grabbing people, throwing them in a van and taking them off, putting them in a uniform, sending them to the front. Until you get there, even conscription is still in some ways voluntary. You can say, we'll mess up your life, you won't be able to get a job. You can say whatever you want. You still got to make the person go do it. And when they show up, you got to get them to actually get on board with being trained. And here's another problem we have. Being a soldier in 2024 is not like being a soldier in 1974. Military tactics have changed. The training on-ramp is much higher and much longer for the things that you actually need people to do, because the purpose of the military is to kill people. No matter what anybody tells you, that's the purpose of the military, to kill people. I'm not saying they don't do a lot of other things, and some of them good. I'm saying the purpose of the military is to defend your country, and the way you do that is when there's a threat, you kill the people that threaten your country. And those lethal jobs in the military are the ones that we most need for the military to do what the military is designed to do, even if it doesn't act. Even if it's actually what it's supposed to be, which is a deterrent. An incredibly lethal military that minds its own business and stays home can still be a hell of a deterrent. But we can't today get a person ready to do these jobs in 12 to 20 weeks. It is a long, and then you also have, as you expand the size of a force, you need more and more senior people to lead squads, to lead platoons, to lead companies. And you can't just grow easily with that in this day and age. It's much more difficult. It's much more difficult. Now, while this is all going on, a French general has made another one of those quiet part out loud statements. This French general has said that we must control public opinion if we are going to maintain our ability to prosecute wars, is basically what it is. And you can read the article if you want, but this is on RT. But RT, actually, I'm going to say this about them, and some of you are going to get the wrong idea. I trust no news agency at all. I don't trust anybody. And because I don't trust people, I verify articles by researching behind the scenes of that article. Is what's being claimed here true? Is it being presented out of context or what have you? And I catch RT in lies. And I even catch RT in like misinformation where it's not really a lie, but it's not really the truth. It's kind of out of context. I catch RT with that a lot less than I catch Fox News, CNN, etc. in doing that. And MSNBC, just throw that the fuck out. Like what was Daily News or something, right? You remember back in the 70s, or not 70s, more like 80s and 90s, you'd be in line at the supermarket to pay for your groceries. And they had these, you know, magazines like People and shit like that, all that. But there was the one, and they would have things on it like, Bat Boy and the Clinton alien baby and shit like that. Those magazines are more legitimate journalism than MSNBC is today. And I'm going to stop here just saying, usually I ignore comments while I'm doing this, but this is backwards ass thinking. You don't understand war if you're saying this, dude. So Paul says drone warfare is chicken shit. No, warfare is you make the enemy dead as efficiently as possible, as quickly as possible, to the point where they yield and you end the fucking war, right? Because in the words of Sun Tzu, No. I'm not sure it was Sun that said this, but I know the quote. No nation has ever benefited by a prolonged war. So this idea, like, see, the same person that would say that would say, well, you know, snipers are badass. Until the sniper's on the other side shooting you, then he's a chicken shit. This is not how war works. War works by force on force, and the superior force wins. There's none of this chivalry bullshit that we have in our heads is a big, and this is why it's important. This is how you lead people into war, with chivalry bullshit. If I'm going into conflict with somebody that doesn't want to beat me up, they want to make me dead. They want to blow my guts outside of my body. A drone, I don't care. A bomb, I don't care. A missile, I don't. Whatever's necessary for me to make them dead first is what they're getting. And if you don't think that way, then you have no business anywhere near military service. You don't. Because you don't understand the purpose of what you're doing. Right? And that's not pro-war or anything like that. That's just reality. Anyway, this general from France has basically acknowledged, and here was where I was going with this, and I lost track there. The speech he actually gave goes into a great deal more than just this. And that's what I'm saying. RT didn't really disinfo this, but they focused on one piece of like a five-pronged thing about keeping militaries lethal and effective. And the other four, whether I agree with what you do with the military or not is a different subject, they were spot on to reality. This one's not even wrong. If you run a nation and you're in a war and you don't want your people to like turn against the war, then you have to control the flow of information to those people. Whether that information is factual or fictitious doesn't matter. You have to control it. Because if people actually find out what's really going on, and it doesn't line up completely with our side's winning and this is worth doing and we're the good guys, then your people will turn on you. Then your people will turn on you. Well, gee, I wonder what kind of place that could be going on right now. I'll leave that one at that today. But, yep, that's what they want to make sure of, that they control the information. Because if you find out the truth, you just may not be all in on doing this. And I skipped this one, and I'm glad I caught it because I don't want to miss it. This kind of fits in with war and the draft and all. So I'm just looking at this picture. I'm thinking this is Jesse Ventura on the floor of the Congress, one way or another, House or Senate, I don't know which. And he's been asked a question about military service. And this is what he has to say about it. And again, I think this is one of the most powerful things I've ever heard. So I'm glad I caught my mistake in skipping this.
At 18, I went into the United States Navy. I spent 1 year being trained and became a Navy SEAL. I then deployed to Southeast Asia and Vietnam for a 9-month deployment. While I was in BUDS training, underwater demolition SEAL training, I turned 19. While I was deployed on my first deployment to Vietnam, I turned 20. I returned home. Within 1 week, I went into my executive officer and I demanded to go back to Vietnam. He looked at me and said, but you just got home. You can't do that. He said, Navy requirements. You got to be 6 months out of the combat zone before you can go back in. I said, here's the problem, sir. I said, over there, I'm a man. Here, I'm a child. I had done all of that. 9 months, came back, and I could not drink a beer on Orange Avenue because I was under 21. I couldn't even vote for who sent me to Vietnam because voting was 21 then. I wasn't old enough. What did I learn from that? Gee, I guess we send children to war, don't we?
All right, guys. To me, again, that was one of the most powerful statements that a person can make. And it's amazing how this is another thing this makes me think of. If you want to get the statist, rah-rah, we're number one, foam finger people, excited, have a veteran speak. You know? And if the veteran speaks and he reinforces the bullshit that they're told to believe and they choose to believe, then he might as well be a demigod. He's a veteran. And if you disagree with anything he says, they'll say, how dare you? That man fought for your freedoms. you don't know. And you say, well, I served too. Then they start talking shit about you, right? Right? And you didn't serve for real or whatever bullshit they have to come up with. You could be, I'm not, but you could be like a multi-decorated combat veteran with 9 tours. And the one that's giving them the rah-rah bullshit could be someone like me, served 3 years, was a mechanic. And they'll tell the combat vet, you got no right to say nothing about this guy. You don't know shit. They want to be told what they want to be told. And that's why all these lies are so easy to sell. It's easy to sell a lie when people want to hear the lie told that way. But have them tell you the truth. We have our wars fought by our children. Well, he must be crazy. He must be crazy. He's insane. He doesn't know what he's talking about. You know, maybe he was good back in the day when he was a soldier, but now, I mean, obviously something's happened to him. He got in with the crazies, Alex Jones group, and they ruined him or anything. But they won't actually debate the claim. When we're sending 18, 19-year-old kids to fight our wars, we are sending children to fight our wars. An 18-year-old is a child. Now, when you're 18, this is the beauty of an 18-year-old. An 18-year-old is just old enough to believe they're not a kid anymore. Because when you're 18, you don't think that you need to be told what to do anymore. You're like, I'm a man. I'm a man. And as you get older, you start to realize you probably really go from adolescent to true, straight-minded adult somewhere around between 25 and 30. Now, I'm not for lowering ages on things or anything. I'm just saying, like, honest to God, there is something wrong with people when they can't understand that two things can be true at the same time. You can be old enough to have a job. You can be old enough to pay your own rent. You can be old enough to be trusted with certain responsibilities, and you still might not truly be an adult. As in, you have the ability to think clearly about your choices today and how they will impact your tomorrow. And this is a place for all the talk of, like, women and men are not equal, and there are certain things men can do, like lift a lot of weight that women on average will never lift the weight on average that men do and what have you. And sports. But there are places where women seem to have certain advantages. And I don't see it as of late. I see a lot of really stupid 20-year-old women out there. I really do. But I think that's more a cultural place in time. And that this is the way they're acting, and this is the people you're seeing versus the average person and how they really are. Women tend, in my experience, to kind of get this grasp on the future and what have you, 2021. And men seem to hold off to about 25, and some of them are still playing video games in their basement when they're 38. But again, I think that's also cultural. But there's a lot of countries where they have the draft, but the age for the draft is 21 or 25 years of age because they recognize that we're sending our children off to fight our wars. Now, my problem with the entire draft thing is it's an indentured servitude. If you can't get your young men and young women to see service to their nation as being worthy in the situation you're in, maybe the problem's at home and it's not those other people over there you want to send them off to have conflict with. Yeah. So, moving on, sticking with war for a little bit more, Lindsey Graham recently said the quiet part out loud as well. There's a lot of the quiet part out loud getting said. Lindsey Graham said the following, and again, this is an RT piece, but it, again, I just, sometimes when I'm going to put an RT piece up as a source, I think, well, I can find this somewhere else. Maybe I shouldn't use RT. But then what I'll do is I'll read the articles and say, which publication did the best job on this? And if it's RT, it's RT. Especially if you can then track down and determine that what was being said actually was being said. So here's what happened. In a recent interview on CBS program Face the Nation, Graham argued that Washington must not permit Russia to win the war in Ukraine because the rich deposits of critical minerals on Ukraine's territory, which are worth $10 to $12 trillion, according to the senator. And he went on to say that Russia cannot have control over this gold mine that would enrich Moscow and enable it to share the extracted minerals with China. And that if Ukraine retains control over them, they could be the richest country in all of Europe, by the way, and our vassal, and the biggest business partner we ever dreamed of, i.e. our vassal, right? That's what I'm saying. And third, therefore, the outcome of the war in Ukraine is a very big deal, according to Graham. Indeed, according to Graham, the stakes are so high, the U.S. must help Kyiv win a war we can't afford to lose. Wait a minute. Hold on. Somebody correct me if I'm wrong, please. But this isn't the story that I've heard since all this shit started. I heard this was a war of naked aggression by Putin. And he wants to take all of Europe over. And Ukraine is fighting for my freedom while they fight for their own freedom. This is what I have been told. This is the justification that this war has been sold on. But here's what's really happening here. Yes, this is the bigger reason why. What we want in Ukraine is a nation we can dump massive amounts of immigrants into, completely rebuild the way that we want to, and maintain in a disordered state that enriches our country and remains a thorn in the side of Russia. Yes, that's what we want. So if we have to fight to the last Ukrainian, that's okay. We'll replace them when it's all over. We know full well Putin has no intention to take all of Ukraine. We know this. So we play this game, very dangerous game. When you start shooting at each other, sometimes somebody takes offense. And sometimes a game of escalation begins, and sometimes that doesn't end well. But the plan here is exactly that. And well, we can't let Putin have it because of all these minerals. The problem they're in now, most of the resources are in the Donbas, which Russia absolutely is not going to give up now. They have control over it. They've taken control over it. They've invested a lot of blood and treasure in it. They're not going to give it back. And so it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out, because Graham's not worried about all of Ukraine. He's worried about, again, the four provinces, none of which Nikki Haley was capable of naming. And I'm wondering if he could do it either. I wonder if Graham could tell you. He probably could. He's actually fairly good at spin and knowing the right answers when he's asked a question. He also is a complete scumbag, in my opinion. Now, let's move on to more of having our opinions controlled. The World Health Organization just acknowledged that the bird flu patient in Mexico died of other medical conditions. And in this article, even the way that this is on ABC News, even the way it's phrased, brings back some memories of the COVIDs and the way they phrase things there. But they say the man died in a separate condition and not saying the man died from a separate condition and not bird flu. Although the World Health Organization says the patient only tested positive for bird flu, not that he had died of bird flu. Doesn't that sound familiar? But they say that other comorbidities, that's the term that gets used in this article, other comorbidities, right? So he actually died from other comorbidities. Now, there's an important thing to ferret out in that claim. Even when they're admitting they're lying, they're still lying. A comorbidity would be, dude got this disease, and these other diseases, other illnesses, other chronic conditions he already had, the two combined killed him. And had he not had these comorbidities and been a normal, healthy person, getting this other disease wouldn't have killed him. But at the same time, he probably wouldn't have died if he didn't get the flu. You see how that's what makes it a comorbidity, co-cause of morbidity, comorbidity, co-cause of death. Okay, this is bullshit. This man was on death's door for weeks before he died. And when they say he tested positive from this, we don't even know what the hell that means in Mexico. But what clearly was going on here is attempt to ramp up the fear, line up people in the immunization lines, all this shit, And this is the second big lie. Because there was another person they said got a case of it from a cow, and somehow the cow got it from a chicken, even though the cow was nowhere near a chicken at any point in time. But the guy that got the flu, his only symptom was pink eye. So it's very clear to me that they're really pushing things here to see if they can gain back what they know they have lost from what went on between late 2019 to about 2023. In that, they made so many advances in their agendas of control, of global governance. A global pandemic agreement is a form of global governance. You do understand that, right? Just because governance doesn't invade all walks of life, it's still governance. It only invades this. And how do you get the camel in the tent? You get the nose in first, right? They made so many strides. In fact, I think they got more done than they ever thought they could get done with this. But I think what happened is somewhere in the middle of it, they were like, fuck, we really can go all the way. And then there's probably some people in the room, like a Mr. Burns character, going, I don't know if that would be excellent or not. That might be too much. No, shut up, Mr. Burns. You're going to die anyway. And boom, they went wholesale. And a blowback has been huge. So it seems to me like they're probing the edges of this. Can we get any of this back? And my hope is the answer is a big fat no. I'd say there's about 30% of people out there that still buy into all this shit. They will justify everything that happened for 3 years. They'll explain to you how it would have been so much worse if we didn't do it. Grandma really would have died twice instead of just once. They can't articulate any facts, but they can regurgitate the talking points they were given. But about 70% of people are like, and I'm talking 70% of people includes people who got multiple jabs, who wore the mask, who stayed at home, socially distanced, who believed everything, who looked at the real-time death counter and actually thought it was real. Even they, over 3 years of watching this play out, have gone, I don't think so. I don't think so, Scooter. We're done with this. And so I think they're trying to figure out what they can win back, and I don't think they can. I think they have to try new angles. But I do think it's a gauge the response. I don't believe any of these people actually think that we need to really worry about this. They just want us to. And, you know, one of the things I've noticed, too, I was listening to some news report this weekend, and this woman was talking about this poll they did and the things that people worry about. And the irony to me in listening to her was they worry about all the things that you tell them they're supposed to worry about, and then you act like it's a big revelation. It was all the shit that the media tells you to worry about every day, and they say 68% of people worry about this. Well, no shit, Scooter. Really? The shit you broadcast 24/7, 365, pushed through your fake-ass viral influencers on all these social media platforms, the shit you bathe people in, they worry about. Well, no shit. That's the surprise. That's the surprise. Anyway, the big news here is that the World Health Organization lied to you about potential of pandemic again. And when I say again, you need to hear me say it. The swallowing thing happened, period, again, period. Right? Like, they're almost completely different thoughts at this point because it's so obvious that that's what they're doing. Next up, some good news. A federal judge vacated the ATF's pistol brace ban. So unless you've been under a rock, you'll know that people like Sig have come out with these pistol braces. And I'm going to be honest. I'm going to do something a lot of people on our side don't do. I'm going to be honest. We all know what they are. We all know what they are. They are fucking stocks, but they're designed so that it could be a pistol brace. So that means that they have a function other than being a stock. But nobody buys a SIG brace for an AR-15 pistol and slides it up on that buffer tube so that they can lock it on their arm and fire it. Just because you can, that's not what sells them. That's not why people buy them. People buy them because you put it on there and you have immediately an SBR through a loophole that's legal. And like I said, so the ATF was like, they're legal. They're not legal. They're legal. They had this internal back and forth.
And they eventually came to this compromise and said, well, they're legal until you put them shoulder the weapon. And so it's a pistol brace, and now it's a stock when you shoulder. And now it's a pistol brace, and now it's a stock, and now it's a pistol brace. And when they did that, what they were telegraphing there, whether that was the intention or not, probably wasn't the intention. But sometimes your actions telegraph what you're really worried about, even if you don't want them to. And what they were telegraphing is they knew they were overstepping their authority. They knew they had no authority to call an accessory something other than what it was. So if it's a pistol brace, it's a pistol brace. And if it's on a pistol, it's still a pistol. And we know this. And there's no, like, there's loopholes in laws all the time because politicians, in spite of trying to convince you that they're godlike, cannot see the future. They do not know what's going to happen. And no one ever thought, you know what they'll do? They'll create a pistol. It took the market to innovate, and it took the market decades to figure it out. Hey, you know what we could try? Nah, that'll never, what do we got to lose? Tool it up. Let's go. Prototype some of that shit. Let's see what happens. Right? So the market figures out the solution to the loophole. The government realizes what's happened and tries to push it back in a way to make it work. And then they use appeal to emotion, because the other thing that happened, and again, this was shot down by a federal judge in the state of Texas. So there are superior federal appellate courts to go to all the way up to the Supreme Court at this point. But this one, this is the really big news. And of course, I have Daily Cause as our source here. So I did that in spite of the fact that I hate them. I wanted you to see their headline. And their headline is Supreme Court strikes down Trump era ban on gun accessories used in 2017 massacre. Can you imagine if they purported everything like this? Bill makes cars legal that drove over a kid yesterday. I mean, or if they, you know, if they reported the regular flu like they did COVID, if they told you every single person that died, right? And they ran real, I mean, all of this stuff is just about formulating the message to control the mind. But this, the bump stock ban, again, if you maybe have been underneath a rock or something, a bump stock basically goes on to a semi-automatic rifle like an AR-15, an AK-47, what have you. And they allow the gun to kind of float inside the stock. So when you pull the trigger and keep your finger back, the gun actually moves backwards in the stock and then the stock assisted forward up against your finger firing another shot. And this allows the weapon to act like a fully automatic weapon. It's nothing like a fully automatic weapon. Even with the bump stock, you do not have the control of where you're sending those rounds that you would with, you know, the ability to like fire 3-round bursts on an M16. And I know that they have this modern M6, or they're what, M4s now, where you go to a selective fire or you go to burst, and the burst automatically does 3-round bursts. Trust me. The only reason they did that is because of a lack of discipline. I trained on the old A1 M16s, like Vietnam-era ones. They still had the old-school handguards on them back then. And firing 3-round bursts, totally doable. You have a lot of control with them. Bump stocks are not really a stand-in. They're a novelty. And I don't even think they can be blamed for Vegas. I really don't. I really think there was a belt-fed gun involved in that. And again, you can just listen to the audio for yourself if you want to know more about that. But even if they were, it's literally the only application that you would have is like firing at this giant mass of people from a long distance away and arcing shots. And you're not going to get them off that much faster anyway. It's not that much faster of the ability to dump a magazine. It really isn't. And so I think they're junk, but I also, and I expect that they're going to be banned again. Like some Congress is going to get some kind of bill through or something, and Brandon will sign it before he quits or gets voted out or whatever. It's one of those things that's so in the face of government, I don't think they're going to let it stand. But right now, unless you pass some actual legislation, there is no grounds. There is no grounds for a ban on it. It's not legal. So the courts have given us a couple victories here, but there's more at play in this. With the, yeah, this is one thing I got to give Orange Man credit for. With this 6-3 conservative majority on SCOTUS and all of the ones Trump put on there really on gun rights toward this side of things, and Roberts and Thomas both being fairly solid, it all takes one of those two, and you've got it. It is likely that we may go back to like 1984, 1985 with weapons. And since I said 84, you're thinking George Soros, no, none of that. Now, the 1986, right, the 1986 NFA is where a lot of this shit came from. And we may be in a point really soon where if you want a suppressor, you just buy one. A lot of these like accessories and things like that. Like, I don't necessarily think we'll go back to being able to just own fully automatic weapons, just with court action. But I think we're heading for a place like suppressors, all these accessories, all this stuff, SBRs, right? Not loopholes with pistol brace. Like, what does it matter how long a weapon is? Now, it might be the case that the states will be like, we'll go to a very federalist system, which is the government we're supposed to have, where California can say, hey, you can't have a suppressor in California. You can't have an SBR in California or what have you. And that may be a whole different battle in the courts. But at a federal level, and I'll tell you what's making me really believe this, what's been done with the tax stamps. And I just learned about this. I mentioned it last week. I learned about it a couple weeks ago from my buddy JR. So it used to be you wanted to get a suppressor and you could have been the Pope's nephew with a perfect record and you're the best friend of your local police chief. And it still took you 6 months minimum to get a tax stamp approved. And so that held a lot of people off from doing it. It wasn't really the $200. It's all the shit you have to do and then how long you have to wait. And it might not be 6 months. It might be 9. And now people are getting their stamps on their suppressors in 24 to 48 hours. And I'm like, what? What? Well, it turns out the reason for like adding personnel and speeding that up is it's a money grab. There's a lot of people inside the government now that are afraid this is all going to get shot down by the courts. And you can go, you're going to be able to go to Amazon and pay $75 and get a silencer. And it may, suppressors should be built into all firearms. Not having one should require a note from your mom, says Paul. I kind of agree. I mean, I do have friends that when you're shooting with them at the range, if you don't have a suppressor, they consider it kind of rude because you're making too much noise. But they're speeding this up to try to bring as much money in as they can in case that door closes for them. So what does that also mean? That means they could have been doing it this way the whole damn time. They didn't want to. But now we got like a reverse regulatory capture thing where this money they've relied on, and I'm sure there's people that are going to have to like find new jobs if that money goes away. It's really going to be interesting to see where that goes. But I'm glad to see those two things happening. Now, something I'm not happy to see happen. The former head of the NSA, which is the spook of spook organizations, for all the shit the CIA gets, and they do operate inside the United States even though they're not supposed to, at least their mandate says they're not supposed to, and they do most of their operations outside the United States. The NSA exists to spy on you and me. That's what it exists to do. Well, the NSA director stepped down in February. He's now going to join the safety team at OpenAI. Okay. Do you know why you put anybody from government on one of your boards in corporate America? There is only one reason you do it. It makes it easier to sell to the government. It's the revolving door. You get the guy, he goes and he's a congressman, then he's a lobbyist. Then he's on a presidential cabinet, and he's a lobbyist again, then he serves on a board, then he goes back into government. It's that revolving four-sided door that they keep sending these people through. Dude runs the largest chicken company in the world, becomes the Secretary of Agriculture, then goes back into the private. This is just typical. So what does that mean? It means that OpenAI fancies himself being able to build a bunch of shit to sell to your government. Now, why would they want, of all the different government officials they could come up with to hire to get that accomplished? Yeah, a retired general, you know, a retired congressman, you know, somebody that was like at the Department of the Interior. There's all kinds of government influence you could buy. What are they buying? They're buying the highest level of influence they can into the government's espionage on the American people with artificial intelligence-driven technology. They're doing this for one reason, to spy on you and to get paid really well to help the government do it. That's why they're doing it. And if I have to say any more on that, I'm probably wasting my time, so we'll just move on from there, because that's a pretty easy one for you to track yourself down to what's going on. This also happened, and the fact that you have not heard jack shit about this on any meaningful level from any of the mainstream news outlets is kind of insane. So the U.S. and the Saudi Arabian government created the petrodollar, which isn't a real thing. It's a term used to describe an agreement. All the way back in early 1970s, son of a bitch, right around the time the U.S. left the gold standard fully. Just crazy that it worked out that way. And the agreement was the Saudis would only sell oil for U.S. dollars, which meant pretty much all the other Middle Eastern countries that were part of the cabal we call OPEC would end up doing the same thing, and they have. And since every country on the planet buys oil from somebody, except maybe Saudi Arabia, because even like major oil producers are still like, they produce certain grades of crude. They need certain other grades of crude for certain things. So even producers that make more oil than they need still export some, import some. And by taking the main Middle East market and making it a dollar-based market, and the U.S. being a dollar-based market, and having influence over our allies like Japan and Germany and what have you, and the U.K., we pretty much ensured that every nation would be forced onto the dollar, at least at some level. That's the whole point. Even if you don't import any oil, I'll tell you what you are doing. You're exporting oil, and you're selling the exported oil into a dollar-based market. So now you're receiving, even if you're not spending dollars. And if you think about that, the advantage that gives our government, our nation in the world, is massive. Think about it this way. Let's imagine that California, Arizona, and Texas produce no oranges, right? And neither does Hawaii. Florida and Florida man are the only people that can make oranges in the United States. Or the only, let's just say, something, the country tilted, I don't know, right? And so Florida's the only state in the United States with a climate conducive to producing oranges. And we said, well, to do commerce between the states, you have to use oranges. And Florida is the lone supplier of oranges. You can see how Florida would rapidly become, even though oranges as a currency is a dumb idea, if somehow it could work, it's a thought experiment, Florida and Florida man would become the wealthiest demographic in the country. You see how that works, right? Because no matter it, when Texas and Pennsylvania were doing any kind of commerce, they would have to exchange it through oranges that come from Florida to get that done. That's what this effectively did. Because even though the rest of the world kind of say, yeah, the dollar's the reserve currency, what was the fucking enforcement mechanism? Well, once you had the world's leading supplier of oil say, we'll only take dollars, you had it. And this is a thing a lot of people don't know. This was a codified agreement between the two nations. And it had an expiration date, because the Saudis are many things, but they are not stupid. And they were unwilling to hamstring people 100 years in the future. They would all be dead, and these people would be hamstrung with what they did. So they required an exit date. That exit date just happened. It's been 50 years, a 50-year agreement. And the Saudis just went, yeah, we don't need that anymore. And so far, most of the business for oil Saudi Arabia and other partners has been in dollars, even though the agreement's expired. But here's another thing that just happened. The crown prince of Saudi Arabia was supposed to be at the G7. Didn't go. Don't have time. Got other shit going on. Meeting of the largest financial powers in the world, representing my country there. Yeah, it's important, but my dog got sick and I have to clean up his vomit or something. But you know where he will be the next BRICS meeting? Fact check me. I never get upset when somebody fact checks me. It's on his schedule. Going to BRICS. Not going to the G7. What do you think that's telegraphing? You got more and more financial screws being tightened around Russia with sanctions. The Biden administration just announced that. Okay, great. So you're making it harder for Russia to do business. Russia is one of the key players in BRICS. Saudi Arabia is getting very cozy to the BRICS alliance. And people keep trying to make it like the BRICS alliance isn't that big a deal. It's the majority of the population of the planet. Yes, their GDP of fake printed money is lower than the United States and our allies. But the delta in that gets less and less every year. And the more we squeeze, the more we create strange bedfellows. I mean, Russia and China right now are tighter than they have been in 30 years, at least. And we did it. We threw Putin right into Xi Jinping's arms. And I believe it was all set up by China. China knew what they were orchestrating through the last 10 years. And it's kind of a Hail Mary for them. China, I'll tell you another thing. This is something the TV won't tell you. China has its own problems. China is in a population decline. Now, they have a billion plus people, but you build everything in your society based on where you are and always assuming you're going to get bigger. And China has major issues. China has ghost cities in China. They have ghost cities in Africa. There's entire buildups that they did with construction, like make work construction programs. There's no one to give it to now. They do not have the environment that we think they do. Now, I'm not saying it's good. There's a hell of a lot of oppression. There's definitely an enforced caste system, though it works different than most caste systems in China with social credit scores and all this shit. But I think we think of China as being like this incredibly slave labor market. People work 16 hours a day, 7 days a week, and that's why they prosper. I'm telling you, dealing with people in China, the fucking people are on vacation all the time. All the time. Every third freaking week I hear back from my VWAR rep, I'm going to be out all week on this festival or that festival or this holiday or that holiday, right? They don't have the work ethic that you think they do. I'm not saying it's poor. I'm just saying they don't it's not what you think it is. So China's got its own problems. So the way it can starve those problems off, it can't do it with its military. The reality is a military, heavy-duty, real full-on military conflict between like China and the United States is untenable to both sides. It eventually leads to big mushroom clouds and everybody dying and nobody having what they want, mutually assured destruction. So unless somebody really screws up, that's not the direction this all heads. No, the next war is an economic war. And I don't mean the economic war on the middle class. That's an old war. It's ongoing. We're losing, by the way. No, I mean between nations. It's a socioeconomic war. Which economic and sociological system is going to win out? And the reality is the U.S. version should have no fear of that. It should be able to destroy any other system out there. Except we don't follow our own system. We have people that don't know what gender they are. We have people that live really great lives that think they're oppressed. We have so screwed ourselves up. We've made ourselves vulnerable to an inherently weak enemy. They're just less incompetent than we are. It's a sorry situation we're in. It's why we're at the end of an empire. We've done this to ourselves. We've committed suicide. The last 50 years, we have actively committed suicide on a daily basis as a nation. It doesn't give me any happiness to say that. I don't say that with any smugness or any self-satisfaction or whatever. I wish it wasn't true. As a grandfather, I think about what this world's going to be like when my grandson's 30 years old. You know, at 30, I was hitting the peak of kind of my role in society. I was coming up in the world. I was running a company. I had struggled so hard for, you know, about 10 years, but I had really begun to make it. And by my mid-30s, man, like, I ended up doing this because I was unhappy with where I was, not because it wasn't making me money, not because I wasn't successful. I just decided, since I'm unhappy and I teach people and I mentor people and tell them, you don't have to be unhappy. I don't need to be unhappy either. I'm going to go do something I want to do. And I was able to build a podcast into a business that's now 16 years old. Three days, we have our 16th birthday. TSPC, be 16 years old on the 20th. And I go, will that opportunity exist for my grandson? And the way these people are doing things, I don't think that it will. And nothing could be more indicative of that than the fact that we have Donald Trump running against Joe Biden again for president. This is the, and you can talk RFK till you're blue in the face to me. I'm not going to pay attention to you because I don't pay attention to things that aren't going to happen. Right? I mean, I don't even give this a 1% chance of happening, RFK Jr. winning the election. It's Trump versus Biden. That doesn't mean that I like that. It doesn't mean it's the way I think things should be. It doesn't mean that I see no redeeming qualities at all in RFK. I've recommended his books extensively in the past. If I were president, I'd put him on my cabinet, and he'd have a short leash and a fucking shock collar on, but there's some damn good things he's good at. But he ain't going to be president. And so here's what I want to ask you, though. All this shit you're seeing about Biden lately, where he's, it looks like an animatronic from like Showbiz Pizza in 1985, right? I mean, just, and no idea where he is. And even the left admitting it, more and more so. Now, there's people that believe this is to pave the way for him saying, I'm not going to run for re-election, to do an LBJ and announce that he's out. We're running out of time for that. We're coming up on the convention. It could be done 2 days before the election. I'm just going to say that. People don't realize that. There is nothing that prohibits a candidate from dropping out of the election up until the last 5 minutes, really. Nothing says you can't do it. And then the party has to figure out who to plug in. Okay? But the logical time would be before the convention. So they got these debates coming up, and this first debate is well before the convention. This has never happened before. Debates are usually held into like 40-ish days, somewhere in that range, and there'll be two or three of them before the election. So you're relatively close to the election. The candidates are seated. They've been to the convention. They've done their speech. Everything's official. And so I think this is the play. We'll put old Joe up there, and if he pulls it off, then we'll run with what we brung. But if he really flops, then we have time to maneuver this, because they have a hell of a problem. They have a hell of a problem if they get rid of Joe. I know everybody thinks they're just going to get rid of him. I got somebody here telling me Biden will not even make the convention. They will have him pre-filmed on Zoom. And there's a lot of people that just really think that they're just going to replace him. There's a problem with this. If you had a relatively popular, competent vice presidential candidate that was at least somewhat well-liked, it'd be easy. Well, what are we going to do? Well, the president will announce that he's not running again. That will basically default to the vice president. The vice president will select their vice presidential candidate, and they'll become the nominee. Kamala, whatever the hell her name is. Right? The freaking hyena. Okay, she couldn't win an election against me. That's how bad it is. That woman cannot win a presidential election. It is untenable. No one will do it. It's not going to happen. It would be... She would probably win California, Oregon, Washington, maybe New York. It would be almost a Reagan-esque victory, and not a 1980, a 1984 Reagan-esque victory for the Orange Man if it was Kamala. And they know this. See, you don't dump horse A if horse B is worse. You see? Okay. So their problem is, how do we get rid of cackles and get rid of shits at the same time? How do we get rid of shits and giggles at the same time? Now, they don't have time to get this done either, especially with a razor-thin majority in the Senate and how much obstruction there could be. One path would be you tell somebody you're retiring from the Supreme Court, and like that hasn't happened, like you're retiring. And then you tell Kamala, you know, since you were the AG of California and all, and you're a lawyer and you're so, you should be the next Supreme Court justice. And that's a lifetime appointment. You never have to stand for election again. And we all know you're not going to be president. And she might say, all right, I'm in. But it's too late to get her placed. How do you get her out of the way? And people say, well, they'll just tell her to get out of the way. Let me tell you something about bitches like Kamala Harris. They ain't as stupid as you think they are. And when they've got it good, they know they got it good. She ain't going to go out without a fight. So how do you get a Gavin Newsom, or everybody says Michelle Obama, which I don't think that's even going to be close to happening. And the answer is, I don't know. But there's also another thing at play here. Is this a trap for the Orange Man? Is this a trap for the great Trumpkin to keep him from rising again? How? How would that work? So you just don't medicate Biden at a few of his public appearances. So he does the whole weird Mr. Burns hands thing, wandering off to the bushes and all. You maybe let it get a little bit worse than it normally would be. You have the Italian prime minister escort him back. You know, he said, hey, he might flake, ma'am. If you see that, could you just nonchalantly kind of bring him back in? Maybe one of your Secret Service guys does that. He doesn't even know he's part of this plan. He's told this. Then when you get ready for the debate, you amp him up on the drugs that we all know he's been amped up on in the past. If you don't think he was on drugs during that State of the Union, you don't know what using drugs looks like. And you set the bar so low that let's say we were grading the two candidates, 1 to 10 in how they performed in the debate. And Orange Man got an 8 and Biden got a 6.5. Orange Man wins. Woohoo! Orange Man, Orange Julius, Orange Julius, Orange Julius. Okay. But if you set the bar where the public expects, especially the mushy minded middle who decides every election, I'm sorry, but there are 40% of people on both sides that a dead dog could be their candidate and they'll vote for the dead dog before they'd vote for the reincarnation of Jesus Christ if he had the wrong initial after his name. Okay? So those 80% of people, they either vote for their side or they don't vote at all. 20% of people are so malleable in their thought that they will vote for George Bush Jr., turn around and vote for Barack Obama, turn around and vote for freaking Mitt Romney, turn around and vote for Hillary Clinton, and then turn around and turn around a few years later and vote for the Orange Man this time, even if they didn't the first time. You have to think, what kind of mindset has a person willing to switch candidates like that and say, I'm independent? Independent of what? Critical thinking? It's not like these candidates, at least the marketing that makes you vote, wasn't drastically different. It wasn't like the left wasn't pretty much the same and the right wasn't pretty much the same. Now, right now, I could see some movement in independent voter because the left's gotten so stupid. It's almost like, how stupid can we get and get away with it? That's what it feels like they're doing. They just had a thing in California, I think in L.A., somewhere in Crazy Town. They're taking down U-turn signs, the ones that say don't make a U-turn here. Screw the fucking public safety, right? Fuck that. It doesn't matter because apparently U-turn signs are prejudiced and biased against gays. Okay, that's how stupid the left got. So I could see the middle moving to the right in that scenario. But in most of these elections, these people that change which side they support, they don't make any sense at all. So when they watch a debate, they're actually gauging the performance, and they will make decisions on, like, who did better? Who did? Not who's right. Who did better? Okay. So again, if you got Trump at an 8 and Brandon at a 6.5, Orange Julius 8, Brandon 6.5. Yeah. Orange man wins. Julius, Orange Julius, right? Okay. But if you set the expectation of Biden being at a 3 and he comes at a 6.5, he looks way better than he was. I believe that's what they're doing. I believe that that's what they're doing. Missile launch says, I was hoping the U-turn thing was fake. Okay, it wasn't. Paul says he would vote for Tulsi Gabbard. Good for you, man. That's like saying I would vote for Jack Spirko. It means about as much. By the way, I'd be a way better president than her. She's not who you think she is. She's better than the average middle-of-the-road liberal, but in the end, she's a middle-of-the-road liberal with a decent, not great, but decent stance on guns. This is the other thing, right? I'm glad you brought that up. I'm not picking on you, Paul. But Tulsi is a perfect example of what I'm talking about with Biden. Liberals like RFK seem sane today, when if they were talking in 1995, you'd be like, oh, hell no. Because they've moved the goalposts so far, they've moved what the expectation of a liberal is so far, that any of them that don't sound completely retarded, any of them that are at least like, well, you should be able to own a gun, and I'm not going to use gun safety as a cover word for gun regulation, and men and women should not have to play sports against each other, and women shouldn't have dudes with their jock hanging out in their bathroom, and no, this is not okay. And by the way, our children, yeah, we shouldn't be talking to children about sex. They can be 100% liberal on every other issue. Be like, I'll vote for them. You've been manipulated. You've been controlled. You've had your mind altered to a point where you think what you hate is good because it's what you hate less. Which, by the way, is only an expansion of the existing system. Like, no one gets really excited about voting in elections because I really want this person in. I mean, some people do, but they're young and they're naive and they still believe, you know, what people, most voters are saying is this other person sucks worse. So that's how they've moved the needle. When you're sitting here going, how do you have people telling you with a straight face that a U-turn sign is a bigoted thing against gay people? How do we have an honest discussion that a 6-foot man should be able to compete in women's swimming at the collegiate level because he grows his hair long and wears a dress? How do we get to this place? How do we get to a place where you have to say, no, it's not okay to give freaking puberty blockers to a 10-year-old? How do we get there? We get there because they know full well what they're doing. They know you have to go to the complete extreme levels of retardism so that your previous retardism will be acceptable as normal. Republicans today have more in common with Democrats of 20 years ago than they do with Republicans of 10 years ago. I'm saying, and I'm not talking about politicians. They're all liars anyway. I'm talking about the average person. The average conservative accepts a ton of shit now that they did not accept in 1985. And I'm not talking about the stuff that made them bigots. I'm talking about just in general. But that's how it works. You move the right foot so far forward that when the left foot does something stupid, but it doesn't look as dumb as the right foot, you let it go halfway forward. And then in the next cycle, the left foot goes straight past the right foot with stupidity. And then the right foot can inch up. And then the right foot can pass it out. And then they're 2 feet and they're on the same giant. And they're walking all over your face, your back, and your future, and your child's future. But I think it's a trap. I think it's a trap. Now, here's your metaphor for government for the day that just explains everything that we've been talking about up to this point. This is Chuck Schumer. Chucky, he's very excited to share his Father's Day event with you. He's making burgers. And in his post, he said, I've never owned a house in my life. I find that to be bullshit, but I'll let that go. Maybe he just likes apartments and condos, really nice luxury ones. I don't know. But his one of his family members, they just bought a house. The first time anybody's bought a house in the Schumer family. Again, I don't believe this, but okay. And he's outside barbecuing. He's cooking on the grill. He put some cheese on his burger. Hey, nothing wrong with cheese on the burger. Does anybody notice a problem with this picture? With the cheese on the burger? And the glasses on the cutting board that the raw meat was on, by the way? Does anybody see something wrong here? Right? Does anybody see something that's not... I mean, I know that the image is a little bit smaller for you guys that are on the live stream. Let's see if we can make this a little bit better for you. Let me open image in new tab. Share this tab instead, and let's blow this picture up. Now, let's see. Can we see the problem? Anybody in the live stream? I'm sorry for the people on the audio only here. Does anybody in the live stream see the problem? There it is. Noah sees it. Oh, Noah says, burgers are raw and cheese is already on. Now, is that how you make a burger? Do you throw a raw burger on the grill and then throw cheese on top of it while it's still raw? Does anybody do that? I don't think anybody does that. I really don't. Now, why do I say this is a perfect metaphor for all of government? Well, let me tell you what I think actually happened in this picture. All of these politicians, and it's probably the case that the older the politician is, the younger the social media team is, because they think the kids have all the answers. So these people, they have a whole bunch of Zoomers out there, maybe a little bit of younger millennial, and they have them on these teams to do all their social media shit for them. So the thing we also know about a lot of these Zoomers is they've never cooked a fucking meal in their life for themselves either. They've lived on chicken tenders and shit their whole life. They can't handle chicken on a bone, let alone cooking a burger. So they set these shots up and say, hey, Mr. Schumer, come over here and hold this. What do I do with my glasses? I'll throw them down there where the raw meat was 10 minutes ago and pretend that you're cooking. Right? So he just takes a picture. He doesn't know what the fuck's going on. He doesn't know how to cook a burger. If he did, this wouldn't have happened. But the person that set the shot up didn't know it either. But you got to think about this. There's probably 5 to 10 people that touched this before it was published and said, look at Chucky. He's just like you. He cares about his family. He cooks burgers in the backyard too. I mean, this is almost as bad as Liz Warren's thing with the beer. Anybody remember that? I'm going to get me a beer, right? That's a little bit. I think I'm going to get me a beer. And she asked her husband, do you want a beer? No. And then she gets the beer and she tries to drink it. And, you know, the person that's never drank a beer out of a bottle in their life and they don't understand how air works and has to get in the bottle. So they're like deep throating the bottle like they're pleasuring a sailor for $20 or something. And it's, you know, coming, the foam's coming out of it like when they please a sailor or something. Right. Like that was uncomfortable. This is almost as bad. And this is what happens every time these people try to look like one of us, because they have no idea who we are and what we really care about, or they wouldn't do the shit that they do. They would at least talk differently. Everything these people do, every picture they take, every piece of material that they put out is based on data research companies telling them what to say that makes it most likely that they'll win. And I gotta be, Andy, I actually think the grill is on. When I looked, it looked like there was flames underneath the grill. If you find a different version of that picture, it's a little bit wider that shows the hot dogs. The hot dogs look to me kind of like when you see a picture of like a Whopper in a commercial and the grill marks are really strong, where what they actually do in those pictures is like they paint the tomato and they deepen the red colors and they literally will brand the grill marks in with an actual like a friggin' soldering iron or something, right? To make it look more appetizing. The hot dogs kind of, they look like a funky color red. They don't look real to me, but I don't know. I'll digress. I'm back to the point here being that whenever they try to be like you, they can't, because they're making their decision off all these data reports. And what makes it even worse is that they don't really care if they look stupid. They only care if they win. And what I mean by that is Chuck Schumer's data report decision-making is based on him being reelected to the Senate in Nevada. That is all. They don't care how what he does will play in Florida. If he was running for president and Florida was in play in the election, then they would. And this is true because sometimes, because I hate the Democrats so much, I come off as pro-Republican. Trust me, I hate them too. Donald Trump's doing the same shit. You really think that what I'm about to cover next, which is replace the income tax with tariffs, you don't think that went through a data research company? You don't think that went through people telling him what he should and should not be doing, right? But let's talk about that. So I've seen a lot of hate for this come out of the libertarian community. We shouldn't have taxes at all. I completely agree, and we're gonna. We're gonna have taxes anyway. So the question, if you're actually going to analyze this proposal, would be, would the economy of America be better off and would the average American's life be better if we gained the vast majority of government revenue from tariffs instead of income tax? And the answer is probably yes. Going back and finishing up the last segment first, I have to say, I think that everything I'm about to tell you is true. I don't think there's any plan to actually do this. I'm connecting these two segments together. Somebody in a research think tank figured out we could eke out 1 to 2% more vote in 1 to 2 key battleground states, and it wouldn't offset us with harm from others. So say this, because you're never going to do it, and we all know you're never going to do it, and it doesn't matter that you're never going to do it. It plays well with the influential piece of the vote. That's why this was done. But I have this thread here by this gentleman, and I'm going to probably say his name wrong. He's big in the Bitcoin space. Balaji, it's B-A-L-A-J-I. Balaji, Balaji, I'm not sure. But I really like this guy's posts. I've never heard him speak, never heard him on a podcast or anything like that. Don't know if he does those or not. He's more of a writer from what I've seen. And his posts are always very detailed and well thought out. And the case he makes here is for most of American history, tariffs dominated taxes as a source of federal income. If you're on the live stream right now and you see where the little clicker is down there at the bottom, that's right about 1913. Up until there, you'll see no red on the graph because there was no income tax except a very brief time and only on the wealthy during the Civil War for 4 years. That's where you see the little red spike back here. But you see, even the early days of the Federal Reserve and the income tax, the vast majority was still being funded by other sources. In fact, the other thing you see is you see right at the same time, you see orange coming on the graph. Those are corporate taxes. So prior to 1913, we had no corporate income tax and only for a very brief period of time a personal income tax, and the government funded all its needs. Now, look what happens to tariffs. Tariffs are yellow as a source of government revenue at the same time the income tax kicks in. It goes to almost nothing. There's a little bit of it. We move into the 1920s. It starts to shrink. And by the time we hit the war years, it is almost impossible to see that thin yellow line. So the government did fund its existence in the past with tariffs over income tax. Now, here's what people will say, and they're not wrong. You still pay the tariff, Jack. Yeah, I'm not stupid. I know that. All right. So if I buy this glass that's in my hand of water right here, and this glass was made in China, and it wasn't. These were made in Mexico, but let's say it was made in China. And there's a 40% tariff on all goods out of China under this program. And I don't know what the number would be. But then I'm going to pay 40% more for this glass. I agree. I paid the tariff. I also decided to buy the fucking glass. And the glass had to compete with all the other glasses that are imported from other countries subject to tariff. And all the glasses that would be made in the United States if all the other glasses were made in foreign countries with tariffs on them. Right? I know that's protectionism. It doesn't mean it doesn't work. It certainly doesn't mean it doesn't work at all. And there would probably be a lot more manufacturing in the United States if there were more tariffs on imported goods. At the same time, we're not going to stop buying them. We're not going to stop buying them. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. But the big thing is I can make a decision. And this is why I'm not just pro. This is a, like, I'm not pro tax. So this is hard to phrase right. Okay. But if I have to choose, you're going to have a tax. Gun to my head, we're going to blow your brains out the other side of your head. But you get to choose the form. Income tax or sales tax. Because let's be honest, what is a tariff? A tariff's a sales tax. It's just pre-built into the price of the good. Since, Bill in Sri Lanka paid the tax as the owner of the Sri Lanka widgets when they came to the United States. Now Jack has to refund that cost burdened onto the product, right? But I get to choose if I buy the fucking thing or not. And I have ways out of this, even with a sales tax on goods made in America. I can buy secondary market, used product, no sales tax on it, right? There's always ways around it when I have a choice. But again, it's down to I can make the money and keep it, and I can hold on to the property and not have it taxed. We'd be much better off under this. Now, why isn't it going to happen? Because it was never really about funding the government in the first place. The income tax does not exist for the purpose of funding the government. If it did, we wouldn't outspend it by trillions of dollars every year. Where does that money come from? Promise to pay it back in the future, which we all know is never going to happen. There's no way we're going to pay the debt back in the future when the debt underlying total cost of debt keeps going up. When's it gone down in the last 50 years? And it hasn't. You understand that? It went down under Clinton. No, the deficit was reduced. The debt kept going up. It never went down. The United States' actual debt has not dropped in over 50 years. Okay? And it's not gonna. And we all know that. So there it is. Sonia's got it. The income tax is a shift of wealth. They refer to it as redistribution. It is a way by which we shift things. It's also a method of control of people. Who got Al Capone? Who got Al Capone? Did the U.S. Marshals get Al Capone? Did the FBI, or what? I think it wasn't an FBI yet, was there? Secret Service get Al Capone? Did the Texas Rangers get Al Capone? Chicago PD get Al Capone? No, IRS got Al Capone. You don't think that was part of a psyop? Look how powerful we are. How much do Americans fear their government? Because they feel the IRS? And the answer is a lot. There's probably not anything that gives more average people anxiety that is a routine thing in their life than their taxes every year. I remember kids, and I was a kid too back then, coming to me when I was in the Army. I knew how to fill out a 1040 EZ. I mean, if you're a young soldier in the military, it is a one page front and back in a workbook that you look up your adjusted income and then make a subtraction problem. There wasn't any of these young guys that couldn't do it. I was getting $50 to fill out people's tax returns for them when I was 19, 20 years old in the barracks. Why? They were scared to do it. It's like you're in the fucking arm. I would even tell them, like, I'll do it for you, but you don't. And people were like, man, I went and saw Jack. He got me like a $450 refund. He only charged me $50. Hey, man, can you do it for me? I'll do it, but do you want me to show you? No, they didn't even want me to show them how. Now, you talk about somebody that's not going to get audited. A U.S. military member, no dependents, because if you lived in the barracks, you didn't have no dependents, right? No, like, allowance for quarters. But straight up base pay, one source of income. Foreign deployed, so there is no way you have a secondary source of income. No stocks, no interest, people didn't own shit. You talk about the least likely group of people to get audited, and if you audit them, what are you going to find? Here's their freaking W-2. Here's the withholding the government took of the government's money. Get screwed. There's nothing. They were still afraid. The income tax system and everything attached to it in this country is about the redistribution of wealth, the control of people's minds. It is not needed to fund the government because most of the money we spend, we don't have anyway. In fact, most of the money we spend, even if it comes in as taxes, it's money we never had because we created it through the issuance of debt in the first place. So would this be good? Yes. Would it be perfect? Would it fix all our problems? Hell no. But would it be better? I think any consumption tax is better than any income tax. I actually rate on tax evilness. It's all evil. It's all Satan. It's all the devil. It's all 666 and Nero. Nobody can take away my anarchist card. But I can still say there's degrees of bad, right? Murder's bad. Murdering a child is a special place in hell, right? Rape is bad. Raping an 8-year-old, special place in hell. Okay, so when I rank taxes as in three primary forms of taxation, and again, I'll put tariffs in sales tax or consumption tax. There's consumption tax. There's income tax. I call that production tax, right? And then there is property tax. And most people think of the income tax or the productive tax. Being taxed for being productive is the most insidious. I don't. I consider property tax the most insidious. When I'm taxed on my income, I make the money, I pay the tax, now the money's mine. Now, again, you have to judge them individually because I understand that now I took the money I already paid taxes on, I go buy a couch and I pay sales tax on the couch. I get that. But I chose to buy the couch. You see where I'm coming from? But a property tax, I bought the thing. I paid sales tax on the thing. I own the thing because property taxes are not just on real property. There's a lot of businesses that pay a lot of property taxes on things like equipment that they own. When I was in underground construction, we leased all our directional boring machines. These were like the cheapest one we had was $125,000 machine. The most expensive we had was about $500,000 machine. We leased them and they tried to send us a property tax bill. City of Fort Worth tried to tax the property. We don't own it. Send it to Ditchwitch. Send it to Vermeer. Vermeer said send it to them. No, we're not paying it. And they couldn't do anything because they couldn't prove we had ownership of it. And there was no special provision to say, you know, within the city legislation or whatever, this is how this works. But the property tax problem is I bought the thing and I'm going to pay tax on it for how long? Ever. So that to me is the worst form of taxation. I paid for something. I've taken my energy, I've earned currency, and I've turned it over to another party, and I've taken the resource because I've earned the right to it through providing service and energy to society. Now you're going to take a piece of it away on an ongoing basis for the rest of my life. That is the worst. I get no say in that at all. And I rent is a dumbass objection to that because you're paying property tax. Trust me, if you're my tenant, your share of my property tax is in your bill. I'm not paying it. You are. Just like a tariff. So to me, property tax is the worst. The next level of hell is going to be income tax, in my opinion. Because now you're taxing productivity. And that's all I should have to say on that. And I want to get wrapped up today. But I think it's just a horrible thing to say that you want a productive society and then punish productivity. That doesn't make any sense. The least of those three is going to be any kind of a sales tax. Because if I can make the money, save the money, buy the things, and not be penalized for those things, and the only thing I have to do is pay a little bit more for things as I buy them individually and selectively, that's less bad. And there is a fourth tax, and I don't really know where to put it in this, because on some levels, it's the worst of the worst because it enables all the others, and that's the inflation tax. But we won't get into that today. But what do you think? What do you guys think the worst taxes are? What is the worst of the three? Put them in order for me in the live chat here. You got consumption taxes, production taxes, and property taxes. Rank them with the worst one being the first one on your list, and go ahead and drop them in the feed. See if that stirs up some discussion. But I don't think it's going to happen. the tariff thing. Then I want to talk to you about this last piece. And I don't find a lot of really deep positive thoughts on social media. I especially do not find them on X, formerly Twitter, which means the rebranding didn't really work very well. Just some people coming in, property tax being the worst. Aaron says property, income, consumption, kind of the same direction I am. And there's also some discussion about senior citizens and property taxes ceasing for them. Most places, that's not how it works. Most places, what happens, they'll have an age, let's say 63, 65, 67, whatever it is. Wherever your taxes are at that age, they lock as long as you don't move. But if you move, it reassesses anyway. Like if you buy another, like scale, you could end up buying a smaller house and paying higher property taxes in that situation. I know somebody that happened to. Anyway, let me read this from you. And this is from Pleb Cruz. And I really like this. And I've heard other versions of it before, but I read this weekend. I like them. I want to put this on the air. He says, if you're holding a cup of coffee when someone comes along and bumps into you or shakes your arm, making you spill your coffee everywhere, why did you spill the coffee? Because someone bumped into me. Incorrect. You spilled the coffee because there was coffee in your cup. Had there been wine in your cup, you would have spilled wine. Whatever is inside the cup is what we spill out. Therefore, when life comes along and shakes you, which will happen, whatever is inside of you will come out. It's easy to fake it until you get rattled. So we have to ask ourselves, what is in my cup? When life gets tough, what spills over? Joy, gratitude, peace, and humility? Or anger, bitterness, victim mentality, and quitting tendencies? Life provides the cup. You choose how to fill it. Today, let's work toward filling our cup with gratitude, forgiveness, joy, words of affirmation, resilience, positivity, and kindness, gentleness, and love for others. Today, my cup is filled with time today for my tribe of Bitcoiners in BTC Prague. So he wrote this from BTC Prague, which was a big convention there if you don't pay attention to that. Doesn't really matter that it has anything to do with Bitcoin in the end there, does it? I have to say that those words are very true. And they're true in not just when life rattles us, they're true as we age. The bitter, angry old man, you know, unless something happened to him in present time that was really awful, can have some shape on that. But mostly the bitter, angry old man was a bitter, angry young man who was better at hiding it. The happy, bubbly, you know, 88-year-old woman who's just a joy to be around was probably always a joy to be around. And you might think that means that this is inescapable. Well, the reality is you can always work on yourself now so that you have better control over yourself later, because you will get rattled again and you damn sure are going to get older unless you die. Right? That's the only way you don't get older is you fail the first rule of survival, wake up alive tomorrow. And so I ask you, what's in your cup? And when I do a show like this, I want to be sure that I'm not filling your cup with evil and dread and bad. Like I said, I think it's important to understand what's going on in the world around us, because if we don't, then we can't make good decisions. But one thing we always need to remember, no matter what kind of tax they apply to us, we choose how we relate to that tax. Might pay it, but I might pay a lot less than you on the same amount of income because I understand the system better. And I'm completely legal. I promise you, everything I do with taxes is completely legal. I have good accountants, and I make sure we do everything right, okay? But I can still do a better job because I understand that system better. We decide how we act in relation to everything that happens to us, with some very few exceptions that I'll give, because I know there's people trying to break everything. If somebody walks up behind you, shoots you in the back of the head, you just fall down and die. You don't even know what happened. Right. So there are things that are the extreme examples. You get hit by a gravel truck, you're dead, right? Damn thing doesn't even have a suspension. It's just like sitting on the axles. It's, you know, freaking 20 tons of weight total, and it freaking runs in you. You're gone. I get it. There's some fatalism in this. But for 99% of what happens to us in our lives, we have total control about how we react. And the optimistic person, when something doesn't go their way, even if they have a couple seconds where they weaken, even if it's a day of week, like, oh, I can't believe this happened, their mind immediately turns to, so what do I do now? What is my way out? How do I succeed in spite of this failure? But the person who is a walking embodiment of Eeyore from Winnie the Frickin' Pooh, it'll never work, it's not worth it. The minute they're hit with adversity, that's what they default to. And so I have tried for 16 years now to make a show that is in some levels about the doom and the gloom inspiring. You know, we have a show that's about potential for economic collapse as one thing we talk about a lot. The potential for supply chain disruptions, a real pandemic, not the fake bullshit they keep talking about. The poison in our food system, all of that. And yet we've spawned hundreds of successful businesses. It seems kind of crazy, doesn't it? But the reality is adversity makes you more of what you are. So work on building yourself to be the best version that you can be of that self. And then adversity, while it has setbacks, it's also a little bit like taking steroids when you work out. You're going to build the muscles for the positive. Anyway, with that, let's go ahead and wrap up. I want to remind you guys, you can always support our show by doing your online shopping at tspaz.com, T-S-P-A-Z, tspaz.com. The item of the day today is from Amazon. It is one of the best-selling products I have ever put on T-Spaz. Very simple, very inexpensive product. It's the Victor Knox 6-inch semi-stiff boning knife. I have a lot of knives. I probably reach for this knife when it comes to anything to do with meat, trimming, breaking down primals and subprimals, boning chicken, all of that stuff more than any other knife. I just used it last night. I did, I think, 30 chicken thighs that I deboned and trimmed the excess fat off and skinned. And don't worry, the skin's not thrown away. Fat's not thrown away. I use every part of the animal, the bones. We're making bone stock on the stovetop right now. But it was a knife. I didn't even think about reaching for another knife. Sometimes when I'm working with bigger cuts, like if I'm breaking down a strip loin into, you know, New York strips, I might use the larger version of this knife. It's like it's a 8-inch breaking knife. But 90% of the time, this is what I reach for. If you talk to most professional meat cutters, people that work at grocery stores doing breaking down of meats, people that work at butcher shops, etc., the number one knife used is this knife or another version of it. And what happened, I brought this up last year when I started talking about meat cutting, and I sold a ton of them till they were sold out. And when they came back in stock, they were like $15 more a knife. They weren't so affordable anymore. And this new supplier on Amazon's got them at what I think is a really a fair price, $23. $23, these are a great deal. Check them out, and they will become the number one tool that you reach for in all things meat in your kitchen. I'll just say that. Also, I will tell you that the MSB sale is still ongoing. $35 for MSB, discount code TSPC. It will run out soon. Get it while you can. Tomorrow, hold on. I know you guys like start dropping out here at the end. Tomorrow, special guest. It's Tuesday. Yes. But that's when I was able to get the special guest on impromptu, no less than expert council member Nick Ferguson. The show I hinted at last week, we're going to do this week. Nick and I are going to talk about if you really did want to create a community where we own some land together, bro, and we're all going to get our food from our own land, that the way to do that, that would be most reliable, would be a fodder, pasture, livestock-based system. There's room for gardening and a chicken coop here and there or whatever, but you will never make the food that you will make running, let's say, pigs behind cattle or pigs behind sheep or something like that. Like, that's actually the way to do it, and if we add in silvopasture and we're growing fodder and fuel wood, then we have a base that we really can figure out how to make a piece of land provide for multiple families. That's the angle we're going to come at that tomorrow. So I hope you guys enjoy it, and I'll see you tomorrow. I think we're live tomorrow at 11 a.m. with that show. Anyway, check out tspclive.com to always find the next upcoming live stream. Take care. Are they going to bail you out?
just run you round. They said you should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.